Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investors Council of Australia and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisors of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, where each week Ben and I bring you the insider's guide to property finance and money management.
Oh, you said yeah, almost again, didn't you?
You know which way, because, you know, don't you want to do property, money management and finance, or you just don't know,
No, you just gave me that look and then... So, sometimes I go, like, up to someone and I introduce you, and, like, as if I don't know what your name is, but I just go blank.
Yeah.
Like... So, do you ever get that?
Yeah, well, because you concentrate on...
I just concentrate on...
professional, on body language and eye contact, that's it.
Exactly. So, mate...
Well, welcome.
Welcome to the couch.
Thanks for having me again.
That's all right.
Someone would think I'm a co-host.
I don't know, 161 times. You must be doing something right. We've invited someone else back to
the... We have, yes. Someone who's been on before.
A few people on my Insta, and when are you going to get the band back together?
And bad
and
getting the band back together.
So, Ronnie, Veronica Morgan, hello, welcome back to the couch.
I'm back. You stole my line. I was going to say that. Band back together.
I know. I put a little throwback Thursday last week on Insta. It was remember Marie and Peter Top?
Oh yes, your favourite people.
They were my favourite people, and Everyone was underneath me. When's the show coming back? So I thought, well, let's get Veronica on. She might know.
Do you know?
Nope.
No. Hey, welcome.
Thank you.
What's it like being in Melbourne? It's been busy up there in Sydney.
Oh, you know, I've come down here to relax. Well, actually, no, the market's here is stronger than it is in Sydney currently.
We didn't hear that. Is that Melbourne's better than Sydney?
Oh, we're not into Melbourne. We're borderless investors. We'll buy wherever we think we need to buy. So it has been, you know, obviously today's topic is a bit about Sydney, what next?
Nice little entree, Ben, but we've got something else to do.
Oh, we do, okay.
So I've flicked Ronnie a little text this morning. I said, have you got anything for me? Life hack?
Oh,
Mindset Minute?
Yeah. Did you know?
Well, I didn't say did you know, but here's the thing. She's turned up with a Mindset Minute, a life hack, and a did you know.
Beautiful.
So
I'm just going to go and sit on the couch.
Recline the couch.
I'm over here if you need me.
I've got a mission, Ben. My mission is we're getting the band back together. I'm sorry, I'm not sure that there's room for three.
I feel a little bit anxious.
Don't worry, mate. Love you both.
So I can't talk footy the way you do. So, I mean, you know, really there's not really space for me long term, but here I am today.
But she's a Geelong supporter.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah. Oh, good on you, Ivis. Fantastic.
Oh, this is another one.
Are you a Geelong supporter?
Yeah, she's
I did not. 160. I did not know that.
Did not know that. Well, she doesn't talk.
That's probably a good point. She does not talk.
She talks through you.
So, I guess we figure that property is not just about the craft of buying property. It's about mindset as well. So what have you got?
You know me, Bryce, right? I would call myself a pragmatic optimist.
Pragmatic optimist. I like that. Yes.
Skepticism is very, very valuable. It's underrated. But there's a saying that I've used for years, and it is from Seneca, who is a Roman philosopher,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
Luck is when
yep.
Luck is what happens when opportunity meets preparation.
Yes.
So I did prepare today.
Very good.
But what's interesting, I was just reading a bit about this, and I read actually a report about a 10-year scientific study by a professor, an English professor of psychology, called Richard Wiseman, right? And he concluded that lucky people generate their own good fortune via four basic principles. And I just love this because I absolutely think, and it applies to life as well as property. One, they are skilled at creating and noticing chance opportunities.
Mm, totally.
There you go.
Totally.
So, secondly, they make lucky decisions by listening to their intuition.
Ooh. Listen to their gut, yeah.
Listen to their gut. Three, they create self-fulfilling prophecies via positive expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a positive mindset, positive pragmatism. And four, adopt a resilient attitude that transforms bad luck into good. And I have to tell you, resilience, I think, is a bit of a personal theme.
Yeah.
So bad stuff happens.
Yeah, it happens to us all.
And it's how you you know,
deal with it.
Well, it's how you deal with it, but it's also, it's amazing the opportunities that come after you've closed the door on something that's really bad.
Correct.
So even being on TV with you, something bad had happened to me.
After my bad experience with you,
everything's gone so well since.
I didn't actually mean it that way. Before then, I'd had a bad experience. But the door to TV would not have opened had I not had that bad experience.
Oh, that's going
to
go in the hole up real for me, Ivis.
Don't edit that out.
No, Ivis is under strict instructions about her editing. But no, that's, it's almost like, related back to property, how many times have you had a client that's missed a property and they just thought they were devastated, and then when they got the one they eventually got, they could see why that door was closed.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So that's good stuff.
There's some terrific ones there.
You go,
I'm a little
like
bit worried about not only are you redundant, but me redundant. So so there you go, Mindset Matters. So stick around, folks. We're going to hear Veronica's life hack, Ben.
Oh, good. Can't wait for that one.
And did you know?
Did you know?
And I know you're disappointed that you don't get to do did you know, because of all the prep work that you've done. Hey, I thought it'd be really cool because we had Feel Good February where we dived into mindset, which was good for that month. But now we really want to get stuck into the detail around property. And I thought... who better than you to come up here and talk to us with, for a couple of things? One, you were in the thick of it, and we just had lunch, and we were talking about how, imagine if we're trying to get the show done during the last few years in Sydney, like getting a crew through, getting the agents to agree to us, getting a deal done would have been a nightmare. But that being said, you didn't have the cameras following you around. You still were looking after your clients in your business. So you have a buyer's agency business in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
Good deeds. We'll put the details in the show notes.
Thank you very much.
What was it like in that market?
Nuts. Yeah, absolute nuts. So what we found, that FOMO was everywhere.
Yeah.
And driving, really I would say fundamentally FOMO drove the Sydney property market over the last 5 years. Mm. And what you're seeing is mad prices being paid, sometimes for good property and often for bad.
Mm.
And just the lack of discernment, lack of analysis, lack of... true understanding as to what's a good asset, you know. So this is both investors and owner-occupiers and people just panicking and buying anything without really thinking about what it is they're buying. So I saw so many owner-occupiers doing that, and I saw investors doing that as well. So it'll be really interesting now that things level off and a bit of, you know, normality goes back to the market to see how many of those people actually make money as time moves on versus those that don't, because it's really possible in the one market, in the one suburb, to actually make money or lose money in the same market. Mm. And this is what a lot of people don't understand. So,
have you seen much of those people with regrets? Because, you know, the old, when the tide goes out, you see who's been swimming naked. Have you had any opportunities to see who has been swimming property naked of late? Or is it a bit too early to see?
It's a little bit too early to see that. But I tell you what I've seen from an owner-occupier perspective. I've seen people rush in and buy the wrong property that just doesn't have the longevity. Mm. It actually doesn't solve their problem. It's not the right home for them.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're in a situation where they're thinking about offloading that property, and you know they could have been in a better position financially had they made the good decision.
Mm.
You know, and I think that's going to be something that plays out a bit now.
Yeah.
And obviously investors, well, I guess because I focus on that 10K radius of the CBD, so the inner, you know, the lower North Shore, inner west, eastern suburbs. So my clients haven't suffered really in those areas, but obviously I wouldn't expect my clients to suffer at all. But you know, anecdotally, the amount of stories that I've had and people that I've met that have actually gone out and bought, you know, off the plan, or they bought in, you know, whoop whoop, you know, good old Aussie saying, you know, the outer areas, the house and land packages, some of the you know, the things and the false dreams that people have been chasing in that sort of whole FOMO mindset, it's really, really sad, actually.
So I want to spend a bit of time in talking about the madness and what you learnt from that, what was your strategies when you're playing in a moving market. The first one I have is always around the question of what was the split of owner-occupied buyers versus investor buyers when you're out there at auction. Like, could you, sometimes you can tell if they're owner-occupier or whatever, because obviously everyone was saying that investors are driving this market, investors are driving... Mm. It wasn't investors, it was FOMO generally.
Yes.
So was the split still around 30-70 in terms of 70% investor... Sorry, 30% investor, 70% owner-occupier? Or did it go as high as the data suggested, which was
60. You know,
50 or 60% investor and 40% owner-occupier?
This is one of the things that really frustrates me with the data, like, for instance, if you're looking at apartments, you know, they've really got to pull out existing stock from new stock, for instance. And even that's there's so many differences even in that, because part of that's not even in the auction clearance rate piece, you know what I mean? So there's so many markers that we use in this industry that need to be delved into a little bit deeper. So what we saw anecdotally, obviously it's price point driven. So you're not going to get a lot of investors spending, say, more than 1.5. So therefore, if you're in the space in Sydney, that's a lot of money, isn't it?
But
so if you're in that space with an owner-occupier, you're not necessarily going to be competing with investors. But what I would, what we did definitely see, sort of in that sort of, you know, 1 million plus or minus bracket, you would see the FOMO, particularly for investors, but also owner-occupiers themselves. Big one, bank and mum and dad. And, you know, the amount of first home buyers getting mum or dad, often dad, mostly dad, but, you know, bidding for them at auction, for instance. The amount of times that I saw, you know, the 20-something son or daughter, or even maybe 32-something, because apparently 32 is the average age first home buyers in Australia. But, you know, the amount of times I saw that person say to their parent, "That's it. That don't bid. Stop it. It's okay. I'm, look, I'll walk away. I don't want to pay that price. I can't afford that price. Whatever. It's all right, son. You know, it's all right. We'll look after you."
It's a public show of significance for dad too, isn't it?
It is.
He doesn't want to walk away.
That's exactly right. There's so much driving that. That is way and beyond what that property is worth, and whether it's a good buy, whether it's a good investment, whether it's a good first home, all that sort of stuff driving those decisions and that bidding. And that's what I saw a lot more than investors, to be quite frank.
And you watch it as it plays out. So, you know, obviously part of, we talked about, you know, auction strategies before, but it's all about confidence, isn't it? About being really confident in the moment. And you're sitting there and you're confident, you're bidding, you know, exactly what your strategy is. And then you just you start to see who you're bidding against, and there's dad standing next to daughter or standing next to son, and then they're constantly looking up, and you know you've got the daughter or son out of the game, but then it's that pride thing, it's that, you know, and you're thinking, God damn it, this could go anywhere now, because, and you're out, you know, like you know, but you kept a consistent, confident approach. But you know that, you know, if it was just the boyfriend, girlfriend or the young couple together, you would have got them.
Yeah.
Because dad's there, you're just thinking they're the ones we hate the most in terms of dad and daughter, dad and son.
And you hate them, but I feel sorry for them because they're the ones stuck with it.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if they've paid overs, that's for sure.
Well, on that Throwback Thursday that I talked, the one that we did in Fitzroy, I was up against a home, a firstie, and it was intimidating for them because, as you know, there's two cameras, there's a whole bunch of producers running around in this poor little frail. Oh, no, that's not right. It's not frail, but they were just nervous, and I could read it, and it was no match. But if dad was standing next to them at that point, you know, maybe that sort of, well, as I say, that that public show of significance might have been even more if this camera
was around. How well I've done.
Yeah.
So how did you battle through? What were some of the strategies?
Well, I tell you what, it's interesting because our buying prior to auction was certainly a lot higher. So the percentage of, or proportion of properties that we bought prior to auction was a lot higher during that frenzied period.
Yeah.
And we've got to be very sensitive to that when we set our strategy. We don't ever buy prior to auction purely because of fear.
Yeah.
We'll buy for very good reasons. So we've got a very structured way of looking at what the property is worth, what the agent is quoting, the type of agent you're dealing with, whether there's an opportunity to buy it prior or not, all those sorts of things before we actually set in place a strategy to move forward. And sometimes there's no choice. You have to go to auction, you know?
Yep.
So it's sort of an interesting way to measure all that because, of course, there's no parallel universe, you know? There's no...
Yeah. You can't be judged after you bought it pre-market or pre-auction. Yeah.
But when we do our pricing research, which is rigorous, when we come up with a range that we believe is a reasonable range to pay within, you know, market conditions at the time, and then you see when you review that the ones you buy prior, you buy within the range. The ones that go to auction always go over the range. Yeah, well, that's a fairly good marker.
Yeah, it's a good indicator, isn't it?
So when that changes, of course, we stop buying prior.
How did you, because you've been doing this for a long time and the relationships you have with the agents in Sydney are deep, but, you know, were the people who didn't have those long-established relationships able to get that prior? Because, you know, it was press hard four copies. And for a lot of a lot of people in the Sydney...
Press hard for copies? What's that?
They don't have to do any work.
Oh, I see what you mean. Press hard for copies.
As soon as I get a listing, it's sold.
A doorstop could sell a house. Take orders, give me orders.
So how did you... What was the dialogue you were having with the agents at the time when all the pressure of the FOMO and the sentiments, just take it to auction and you're trying to say, no, get me a deal done before we go?
Well, it's a very good question because we have profiled agents. So we've got 8 different profiles and each of them will operate differently and each of them are motivated differently and each of them also manage their vendors differently. And so from part of our strategy is to understand the profile of the agent to start with and look for those clues. And if you've got an agent that's just going to go to auction every day of the week, and there's a certain type of agent, for instance, that will, they go to ground. It's like, it's la, you know, fingers in ears. You know, for those who can't see, fingers in ear, la, 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 don't want to hear, I don't want to hear, don't want to hear, don't tell me about auctions, I don't want to know, don't tell me about offers, I should say. Yeah. I don't want to know, I'm going to auction, and I don't talk to me.
And if you put an offer in, I might have to adjust my quote, so I don't
want to hear. Yeah, exactly. It's
and
like,
they're not going to reprint me flyers.
I don't want to know. Yeah. And they will go to ground, and they will deliberately avoid talking to you. There's no point trying to push that. You know, you're not going to win friends and influence people. And at the end of the day, you are probably going to disadvantage yourself and your client if you try to push that. Yep. So you've got to be sensitive to the type of agent to start with. But the ones that... And then it comes down to what they're quoting. So sometimes you've got to think, so these agents have gone through the property and sometimes it might be 3 months even beforehand. And so they haven't necessarily revised their quote. And so I think to myself, okay, if they're quoting 900,000, for instance, and we think it's going to go to 1.1 every day of the week, then our 1.078 auction might look really attractive. And if that agent is, you know, willing to work with us and actually put a deadline and all the ducks, you know, line up or the planets align, then that might be the conversation. It's like, well, we need to put in a strong offer. Mm. We can justify to our client, this is where you need to be. We think if it goes to auction, it's going to go there and beyond. So therefore, there's a good reason for doing it. And this is the sort of agent that will actually respond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you get that, then you might move that way. But the other thing is, you've got to remember, is that there are other buyers involved. And if all of a sudden you're having an auction at the end of a telephone and you can't see those buyers, you can't actually influence them anyway, I'd rather go to auction.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, even the boardroom auctions, you sometimes put in different rooms.
Oh.
And so it's the papers being passed around and you're supposedly seeing this offer and you're like, okay, well, I can't read their body language. I can't see whether they're over. You know, they're right on their limit.
Part of our game is professional intimidation.
Totally.
Hey, don't rattle off all 8, but give us a couple. The profile of the agents? Come on. I remember you talking about this when we were travelling around, so I think some of them are funny.
We've got a robot.
Give us the robot.
The robot is somebody that basically... You know, they've read the rule book effectively. You know, they're really well versed in exactly what you do. There's you know, 1, 2, everything's in steps. If you try to subverse that, you try to go in a back door or...
Hang on, we're number 5 yet.
I'm sorry, I can't manage that. And so...
I'm not ready for an offer yet. I'm only at step 3 in my process.
That's exactly right. They can't roll with the punches. If they can't get a deal together. Oh, it's painful.
Mm.
Another one is a defender. And this is someone who's actually, you know, they've linked arms with the vendor and they're going... It's worth 1.2 every day of the week, and I don't care if it's not, because we'll wait for the right buyer. And it doesn't matter. You could go to auction. You could compete for it. You could pull up at 1.1. Everyone else walks off, and they'll still be steadfastly saying this is worth 1.2.
Yeah.
So you get defenders around. Our favourite is a deal doer.
Yeah.
They're professional.
We want them.
We want them, but they also are working for their vendor. We know their agenda is clear. They want to get. You know, they want to get the best outcome for their vendor. They know we want to get the best outcome for our client. We can have a bit of argy-bargy. At the end of the day, we're both professionals getting a deal together. So they're good.
Yeah.
And there's 5 others.
I like them. don't give away all your IP.
No.
It's good stuff.
Hey, so you talked about prior to auction. So you're turning up in the thick of a boom. You know, people's houses are going up $20,000 a week. You know, you turn up. What's some of the things that you would do over and above what you would normally do at an auction to try and get... things in your favour during those crazy times?
You know how much I love auctions? I like playing with numbers.
Yeah.
Because quite often, you know, everyone thinks you've got to bid big. then a little bit less big, a little bit less big, and, and so on until you're down in 1,000s and 500s. Everyone just, there's this unwritten rule that that's how you bid. And I'm like, no, you don't.
Is that the robot bidder?
Yeah.
That's the way the auctioneer would like
that's
it to
exactly.
go. I'm not taking ones, I'm just taking tens at the moment, sir. Thanks very much, I'll come back to you. Anyway,
that's what I'll go. I'll give you one on top of every one of their bids.
Or I'll say, they're asking for a 10, I'll go, oh, I tell you what, I'll give you a 13. What? You're not meant to give me more than I asked for.
Yeah.
I was like, well, it's going to get there. Why muck around?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think 13
is good because then they round it off to the nearest 10, which effectively means they take a 7. Oh, I'll give you a 7.
Yeah.
Sometimes like, I can say no. Like, and then all of a sudden
you're down to 7.
What just happened? We went up by 3 and then all of a sudden we're bringing it down.
So, well, I mean, I think also, you know, I've had some auctioneers actually refuse my odd numbered bid because they can't manage the numbers. And I think, oh my God, is that someone in the wrong game or what?
Is that a robot? Yeah.
Yes.
Very good.
So that's the big strategy in terms of in that boom environment. Just try and throw the agent and then just get the crowd wondering what the dickens you're doing.
Yeah. Well, look, at the end of the day, somebody else has got more money and they're inclined to spend it, then you're not going to win. You're not going to win.
No.
And so it really is about if there's an opportunity just to unsettle and mess things around a bit and just mix with that rhythm and get people thinking rather than just in this sort of robotic, back to the robot, but in the trance or being controlled by the auctioneer, which is obviously the auctioneer's job.
Yeah.
So it's about just messing with that and just breaking the rules a bit and having people think, oh, hang on a minute, is she meant to be doing that? Oh, not really, she's a bit of a smart ass. You know, whatever they're thinking, who cares, as long as they stop bidding.
Correct, that's it, we want to try and change their mind. Mindset away from, because what are the, you know, these people come, I've been looking for months and I don't care, I'm just going to buy this one.
Yep.
And you just know when you're up against those people, like you've got to stop their train of thought.
Yep.
You've got to question, really that much? Is it really worth that much? And then all of a sudden you get on your phone to pretend you've got more than whatever it may be.
It's all street theatre.
No?
No.
Oh, I do.
Actually, one of the guy that was on your podcast. Yep. Who's actually an auctioneer, and I can't remember his name, but he uses this, is the guy running to the cliff.
Oh, yeah, that was Tim Heaviside.
Yes.
That's a really good description.
It is, and that's actually how I describe the way, or freedom within the fence. So I know what our maximum bid is going to be.
Yeah.
I'd never, ever, ever ask a client in the middle of the auction, look, do you want to go up? Never, because that is not the time to make that decision.
No, but if the thing's running mad, I may not even be on the phone, but just that whole thing, just to get them out of their rhythm and just walk away really loud. So, how much? Really, that much? Okay, great, thanks. And bang, I'm straight in because I'm trying to. So, I've used that as a tactic because I needed to break it up.
It's running to the cliff. Because it's running to the cliff.
It's running to the cliff. It's running to the cliff. And I need to try the last thing I've got up my sleeve to try and make that happen.
On the higher price, I like to put the earpiece in just so that they keep them guessing if it's a wealthy Chinese person on the end of the phone. I want them guessing.
Guessing. How many people, though, they've got it, the whole scenario in their heads. They've actually mapped it out.
They've played it out,
And they've got no idea. They've just made their minds up about what the vendor's at and all that sort of stuff. It makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Hey, I thought you wrote a really good blog about something that maybe people who don't live in Sydney wouldn't have experienced, but the embarrassed buyer syndrome. Can you explain that? I did like it. I liked it a lot.
The embarrassed buyer syndrome. So what we started to see at the end of last year was that APRA, the Australian Prudential
Regulatory Authority.
Yeah.
Know that one,
right? Yes. So they have put restrictions on the banks in terms of their lending, and immediately that impacted on investor buyers. But what wasn't really understood was that actually was having a flow through into a home owner or owner-occupier territory.
Yep.
And so what we saw at the end of last year was that a lot of agents were coming up to me at auction when we were about to bid saying, I don't know what's happened, I've just lost 3 buyers, you know, and they didn't know why. And I started thinking to myself, I think I know why. Because our clients were coming to us thinking they were financed. We were asking a series of, you know, hard questions. They'd gone back to their brokers, realised they weren't financed, and that would take on average about an extra month.
Mm.
And I thought, a lot of these buyers are out there without getting represented. You know, they're not getting advice. Mm. At the last minute, they've done what they've always done, which is I just check in with the bank or check in with my broker. Oh, you mean what? Oh, so my serviceability is an issue. I can't borrow as much. That dud investment I bought Darwin. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that investment I bought somewhere is impacting on my borrowing capacity. Yeah. I can't actually go and bid for that property. And so they were disappearing, but they weren't admitting to anybody why. So therein lies the embarrassed buyer. They were embarrassed about the fact they couldn't get money.
Yeah. It rings true. And that was a moving feast. So since sort of early 2015, when we started seeing some of that come through, it started off obviously with just a speed limit on investment lending, and then it moved to interest only, principal, servicing, the whole lot. So it was just a tsunami that just kept giving less and less for borrowers to be able to play with to try and pull the reins in on a very, very fast moving marketplace.
It did work. Hey, just assume someone's listening to this and they're in, let's just say Albany, southwest of Perth, who just have never been to Sydney. How would you describe to someone how the Sydney property market works? What if you were trying to give them an overview, how would you coach them through that conversation?
So if they lived in Albany and they wanted to buy in Sydney.
Because the point in the context is it's, all markets are different, but particularly but Sydney. Markets, so what are the real quirks that the people who come into that market would just go, what the?
Well, Sydney is very fast, for starters, and obviously very auction-oriented. So Sydney and Melbourne, I believe they're very synergistic. There's a lot in common. Yep. If you came from an area where you can make an offer, and then you can go away and do your building and pest inspection and get your finance improved and do all that sort of, and get the contract.
And it's
all
very gentlemanly and professional and all that, as opposed to the shark bath that is Melbourne.
That's exactly right. Then if you walked into Sydney, you would be, ripped to shreds in the bear pit. Because in Sydney, and look, Sydney siders do this, they make this mistake, and nice people get torn up all the time by the property market, and that's why they hate agents. But it's not really the agent's fault, it's the way the system is. And so what they don't understand is that the minute you make an offer, it's open slather. Mm. Agent is well within their rights to go and shop that offer to other buyers. And generally speaking, there are other buyers in the wings. Now, when I say generally speaking, that's for good quality property in good areas. There's plenty of crap property in Sydney, and there's plenty of areas that just don't do, they're not great areas to buy in with a regard for capital growth. So when you are buying quality property, or when you're buying in a frenzy, pretty much there's always buyers circling. And so the slow buyer misses out every time.
And then you've got gazumping laws in terms of, until that contract's exchanged, you can actually get gazumped, which is fascinating. In other parts of Australia, you don't have those laws.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because and that's this sort of paradox here, because the gazumping is legal in New South Wales, right?
It's a thing.
It's a thing, And so if you think that, I can't be gazumped, well, I've got another thing coming for you.
Yeah.
But the reason that the 5-day cooling off period was introduced was to protect buyers.
Yes.
But the reality is, when you're in an auction area, nothing gets sold with a five, and it's a hot market. Mm-hmm. Nothing gets sold with a 5-day cooling off period, because no agent where they're it's going to take the property off the market.
Well, on that, can you explain what a 66W is?
Oh, yes. A 66W certificate is a certificate that the solicitor will sign, or your solicitor as a buyer will sign, that allows you to waive the cooling off period. And only they can sign that certificate, because they have to have advised you what rights you're actually signing away prior to you doing it.
And if the exchange doesn't take place, so even if you've got a verbal... And this can happen in Victoria as well. It's not truly gazumping, but you need to exchange on the contracts, because a verbal offer is not, or a verbal acceptance is not the exchange. Mm. So you need to have that hot contract in your hand with the wet ink signatures on it to basically say it's yours.
Well, you contrast that to Adelaide. So you go to Adelaide, you offer, accept it in writing. No one can gazump you. And then you have a 2-day cooling off period with no penalty, so I can get all of my DD done in the 2 days, and if it doesn't work, I'll just call off no penalty. Yeah. Whereas, so you think about the poor person in, I just used Albany, but think of anyone who does it out Sydney.
Yeah.
They're coming over, they've got to get the head around 66W, and they've got to get the solicitor to do that,
and
they've got to realise that they put an offer in and it could get shopped around.
And I've got bowled over the agency, watch it exchange, and if it doesn't exchange, someone could just walk in the door and pay more for me on the spot whilst I'm driving over to the agency.
And for the privilege, you have to get your building inspection paid for in advance with no guarantee. You have to get all the costs in advance. So it's a...
Body corporate minutes and all that review. It is. is,
because in full disclosure, before the show, I hadn't done a deal in Sydney, and obviously because of the show, I've done quite a few. But God, I tell you, it's a steep learning curve for learning this stuff.
It's funny because
got a national audience.
Remember that argument we had up in Byron Bay about exchange?
I was going to say, which one didn't we have a big argument in Cairns as well? We're running down the street.
No, we had an argument with
the producer. Yeah.
But we had this argument because I couldn't get over how you didn't understand the exchange process, and you couldn't get over how I didn't understand that it wasn't an issue anywhere else. And to this day, I still find it really hard to buy anywhere else. I don't buy anywhere else anyway, outside the show. Yeah.
That was a rager, that fight. That was a good one. That's probably one of our best. Although I did remember the Cairns one that we were.
That was great. Can't remember what it was about, but
anyway. No one else knows what we're talking about, so we'll move on.
Memories.
So, in terms of
what's next?
I kind of think in terms of the question's a bit silly, but why would anyone not consider using a buyer's agent? I mean, in terms of, and I know it's like asking a barber if you need a haircut, but
poor buggers don't know what they don't know.
Yeah, how would you guide that person as to why they should use a buyer's agent?
Oh, you scare the bejesus out of Well, education. That's the important thing. I mean, we need to, and what I always try to do is educate people as to the consequences of not getting advice. They can still choose not to get advice, but they do need to understand that there are consequences.
Yeah, and we're playing with huge amounts of money here. Like, it's not like Adelaide, no disrespect to Adelaide, but
it's just the price.
You might be able to recover from a bad purchase in Adelaide, whereas the price point is three times as much. And it's savage on in and outs with stamp duty. And, you know, we're talking stamp duties of 70, 80, 100,000, 120,000, 150,000.
Yeah.
In Sydney, you just got to get it right.
Well, you've got to get it right anyway, of course, because, you know, I think that what people don't understand also is that Sydney is not one big homogenous market. There are, you know, probably thousands of micro markets.
Understanding that. The harbour dissects the markets, and then you've got the different types of personas of people in different areas around
the city. How would you describe the subs? Shire, Lower North Shore, Upper North Shore, Inner West, Outer West? How would you describe that if you're trying to give that person an idea?
We can break it in within that. Like, say you look at the eastern suburbs, for instance, you've got the inner east, you've got the sort of inner urban, Darlinghurst, Potts Point, that sort of Surrey Hills, and then you've got beaches, and then you've got the suburbia, and you've got harbourfront, you know, Sydney's most expensive property, you know what I mean? And then you've got some of the smallest, cheapest apartments in Sydney in the same area. So there's such a diversity and difference in type of buyer just in that one region. Mm-hmm. So you've got to break it down to even suburb level.
What's your view on apartments? Because Sydney can be a bit more forgiving than every other place around Australia, and particularly when it comes to off-the-plan style apartments. You know, you get burned in Brisbane, you get burned in Melbourne, anywhere else. But Sydney's just got such a huge population. One in three people roughly live in higher density. You've got a huge amount of people. You've got geographical constraints where you've got the mountain ranges, the ocean, the borders, the national parks. So what are your views on, I know them personally, but for the benefit of the listeners, what are your views on apartments in Sydney?
You can go wrong in apartments in Sydney as well. And there's definitely areas of overdevelopment. And in some very good suburbs, there's chunks of overdevelopment and crap product, basically. So I'm a big fan of apartments, though, good apartments in good areas. And I do believe that as Sydney grows, and probably Melbourne as well, you know, I think Sydney's predicted to, I can't remember what year, but it's something like, I was reading an article that is predicted to go up to 7.6 million population over the next
30 years.
Yeah, that's a lot. That puts Sydney, and I think Melbourne's got a very similar
we're neck and neck forecast. Up until 2050.
The numbers are roughly 11.8 million in the next 30 years of additional people coming in, and Sydney and Melbourne are going to harbour about, I think it was about 70% of that population growth. So it's pretty big. I mean, Infrastructure Australia, which we'll talk about in a future podcast in terms of what that looks like, but there's some data coming out of that that's quite interesting that we're going to look at.
Yeah, and I think what that does, that takes certainly Sydney and Melbourne, really, to a level of being an international city. You think about New York, people live in New York with Great Danes. You know, I mean, they bring their family, you know, they bring their kids up.
That's not in the Hamptons, that's right, that's in an apartment. Yeah.
And I see that now in Sydney. There is that that acceptance, that change of perception of
generational change.
You know, living with family, with kids in an apartment. And you can see developers, you know, you can see that there's a difference in the way that good developments are being designed. And I think that really sort of gives indicators as to the future of apartments. And, you know, yeah, there's still the single parent, sorry, single parent, the single person household, that's still quite a big chunk. So there's a lot of goodness, if you like, in terms of the apartment space. It's just a matter of choosing good quality assets.
The data's telling us that 60% of all apartments are owned by investors and only 40%. So if you think about the overall, it's 70-30. So, but if you were to take Sydney out of that, it will actually be more like almost 80-85% of all apartments are owned by investors. Because there are definitely more owner occupiers in Sydney, and that supports a better price point and supports the value that it doesn't collapse like it does in other markets. We've been talking about this before, where Melbourne will go to more density. We absolutely have to. I mean, in fact, there's three choices in terms of what we're going to look like as a city in the next, you know, sort of 20, 30 years. But that is one of them in terms of increasing that density and seeing more and more people accepting that if you want all of that great amenity. Because when you get, you know, we've always said, we don't mind high density apartments and good medium density apartments along the main arterial. We just buy the ones four streets back because that supports the Thai restaurant, the place I like, my little wine bar, my little coffee shop. That's all good. We just don't like to buy those particular assets, and that's what you're coming
exactly
back for.
Exactly the same.
Yeah.
Well, you said buy good apartments, and again, I know what you mean by that, but for the
avoidance
of doubt, what does that mean to you?
Well, you know, I like history for me is the greatest predictor of success, of the future. So, you know, I don't like buying brand new because I just see they're vastly, vastly risky. And so once a building's, say, 10 years old, you've got history. And one of the historical things is the build quality. And you can start looking at that. You can look at the financial health of the building and the way it's been run. The community that is built within that building or that complex. But the other thing that I find, and this is really, really difficult to predict, this is probably the one thing that's even harder to predict than all of those things put together, is what type of owner-occupier uptake is going to happen with the resale. So, you know, you've got the first wave, often our investors that buy into a building. Some buildings then start selling off to owner-occupiers in its first lot of resales. And then you start to see the whole flavour of the complex and the building change. And that is something that you know, no one plans that. That sort of happens organically.
Yeah.
And so I like to look back and go, right, has this building organically developed, you know, a real attraction to owner-occupiers or has it not?
It's a great insight.
And so, you know, and so there are some high-rise buildings in Sydney that we will buy in. You know, that's not our general rule. It's one of our exceptions to our rule. But when we look at the history and do people upgrade and buy up in that same complex? Do tenants want to stay there? Do tenants buy there? That sort of thing. When you start to see that, then that gives me an indication it's a good building.
Well, Tim Lawless was talking about that in CoreLogic, wasn't he? And sort of saying the apartment buildings in Brisbane that have been really, really designed for wonderful owner-occupied living, you know, that all of the status and symbolism that makes it as opposed to a Legoland, you know, straight up, straight down, sort of, you know, all about developer returns, they're holding. Whereas everything else around that in terms of that mass density Legoland stuff is falling off a cliff.
In terms of your own story, you can tell as much or as little as you like, but I don't think you'd be mind me saying that you are a property investor and you're an active property investor. So how has your journey gone? There's the J word. Can you believe the most overused word, the journey? But what was the decision like to buy the first one? What got you to buy the first one, and then what got you to continue to go?
My first property, I think I probably told you this, was a 36 square meter studio apartment in sort of the border of Newtown, Erskineville. And pure luck. It was before I was in property, just pure luck that I got into it. And pure luck that back then I borrowed 95%. You know, it cost $129,000, I think. And I think I borrowed, I had a $6,000 deposit. $3,000 in stamp duty or something. And I felt that I was being ripped off.
You were.
But
what's kept you going? What's the end game for you?
Yeah, look, I guess for me, the end game is I like to have my clients have a plan, and my plan is a little bit more organic, shall we say, because I'm quite opportunistic in how I buy, and that's because I do get what a good asset is, and so therefore I'm prepared to go a little bit out of my plan to buy a good asset. If I had one regret, it would be that I probably got too many houses because every time I get that land tax bill, I really want to vomit. It forces me to do a review. It's a you know, the review is done annually by necessity when I get that bill.
But you can be a little bit more organic because you're in it every day.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas
right.
Whereas our listeners have a job to go to and they can only spend their spare time looking at it. So them planning to become what they plan to become makes a lot more sense.
Absolutely.
Whereas you see, like, I've got this great property. I don't have anyone on my list who's going to take it. So that means I can take it.
Yeah.
You know, and because you don't want to let it go because it's
very much
a good
so.
One.
Yeah. And also I find myself, I can't help myself, I always buy something to add value. And it's just in my DNA. I can't help it.
It's hard for us because, we buy quite a lot of properties these days through the business. So every time, like, can I get back on the run? And it's like, and then we've got one for you, Ben, and it's like, but this other client would be really good for them. And like, all right, I hear what you're saying.
Everyone comes and says, oh, do you guys always just keep buying the best ones? And it's like, well, let me tell you a story about how Ben tried. Do you know the guy that just tries to get in the line somewhere and has to keep moving?
Like, mate, just get to the back.
Just get to the back of the line.
It's so hard. I actually bought a property in my super fund some years ago that a client passed up on. And I thought to myself, it was one of my team had done all the evaluation and everything, and we were filming at the time, and I woke up, it was over the weekend that they backed out of it, and I thought, why are they back out of it? And I've dived in and I've forensically looked at all the due diligence, and I think there's nothing wrong with this. 5 a.m. on the Monday morning, I wake up and go, I'm buying it. And so I did. And it was funny because I had set up my self-managed super fund a year earlier and had it sitting in a folder, like all the stuff in a folder next to my desk, on my desk. And so I had this mad panic to go to the bank. Can I set up the account? No, I got to transfer the money. Nah, all this sort of stuff. And I had to set up a bloody loan account to lend myself or lend my super fund the deposit because I hadn't actually gone and done all of that. And then I did that. Well, actually, I was about to do that. And as it turned out, the agent lost the deposit check. And I never had to set up the loan account for myself because by that time the money had rolled over. Don't worry about that. I'll write you a new one.
In the right name so I don't get any penalty interest because I'm in breach of my covenant.
Saved myself $1,000, you know. It was hilarious,
Very good. So are we ready to go what's next? Are we ready to look at the Sydney property market?
What's next?
So what's next for Sydney?
Well, and once again, we've got to zone it in. I'm going to talk about the inner ring, the 10K radius, the Lower North Shore, the Inner West, the Eastern Suburbs, because outside of that area, I sort of call it the reverse ripple effect. You know, and I've got to come up with an analogy. You can probably help me with this because you're so clever with this sort of thing, Bryce. But see, everyone knows the ripple effect. Mm-hmm. But the paradox is that when the market slows down, the calmest place to be is in the middle. And the rockiest place to be is on the outside. It's like the puddle starts evaporating.
Yeah.
Is that good?
Are you doing,
the puddle evaporating?
Pretty well.
If you put a super slow-mo on a drop going into it and the ripple, it actually bangs in on itself.
Ah.
So there's a ring that will come back into the centre again as it levels out. And that's usually what happens. It happens at extreme level for really high-end valuations, so that top 25% quarter. And it certainly happens in the general marketplace on the higher values in the outer suburbs. So it's that slow-mo ripple effect that comes in.
Oh, interesting. Mm. There you go. So, well, there's science behind it. So therefore, we focus on that 10K radius because in all market conditions, there is underlying demand for quality property in those areas.
Yep.
And so when you look at a growth curve for Sydney in those areas, and even I could dissect it and go with good property, not all property.
Yeah.
You won't see peaks and troughs. Mm. You'll see this sort of meandering, you know, growth curve that levels off for a bit, then takes off, then levels off. And I'm doing this in my hands. I've just realised. You know. But it's a very different shape curve than you're getting in the outer areas. And so, therefore, timing is not so important.
Mm.
Getting in and buying quality property in that good area is key. And so at worst case scenario, things slow down a bit in terms of your rapid growth, but you've got the asset because that's really the most difficult thing when the market slows down is finding good quality assets.
Mm. It's a classic. You hear it talked about with all great shareholder investors as well, timing the market versus time in the market. Mm. They get so annoyed with people sort of saying, you know, do I buy that bad asset? Oh, no, do I buy that good company anytime?
Yeah.
You should be buying that good company anytime because it's just... Yeah. It's just what the market is reflecting the valuation on that day. Oh no, I'm just going to wait. But yeah, as you can see, if you get into the market when you can afford to get into the market and take a long term view, it's always pretty positive in the end.
It's depends on the angle through which you look through the lens. I remember I had a friend at uni. She said that life, don't expect life to change. Just have a look at the angle through which you look at life. She gave me this picture that was looking up at the Leaning Tower of Pisa, framed it for me. And as you look at it, it was fully straight. Said the Leaning Tower of Pisa is still leaning over. It's just the angle through which you look. So if you look at Sydney through the angle of Australia, you think, wow, it's really expensive. Mm. If you look through sort of worldwide, it's still pretty cheap. You know, you can buy stuff on the harbour in Sydney cheaper than what you can buy in the heart of London, for example. So,
well, now we're talking about, you know, apartments, $60 million. Mm. I mean, I can't quite wrap my head around that
I'm struggling with that one.
There is, it's an interesting play at that level, that's for sure. But it's world-class city in many respects.
It's a knowledge centre. And if you've got a knowledge centre, you get good incomes and you get growing incomes.
Yep.
So financial services and knowledge centre, you put those two things together and it's lethal in terms of property values globally.
Yep.
They are the two things you need to look at. Knowledge centre, so good education foundations, and financial services centre. It's crazy.
Mm, lethal combo. I remember one of the things that when we were chatting about when we were on the road, used to always, like, because we were in a hurry, and I'd just be sitting there and you'd go, and instead of asking the agent how many buyers have you got or how many people contract, just flippantly ask them, how many building inspections have you had done? Which was your way of quickly finding out how many buyers. So with that as a backdrop, what are some of the one or two negotiating tips outside of, you know, 101 that you'll go to when you're negotiating a deal?
I think what's really important before we negotiate anything is we absolutely 100% understand two things. One is, what is this property worth? You know, from a like looking at recent sales and doing all the research, what should it sell for? What's a reasonable price for it to sell? And once you've got that as a foundation, you can start considering the other aspects. The other one is, what am I prepared to pay for it if I absolutely have to?
Mm.
I don't want to wake up the next morning thinking, oh, I should have gone there, you know?
Yeah.
And equally, I don't want to wake up the next morning going, oh, I feel sick because I bought it at that price. Yeah. So we dry run all of our clients through all of that. We run those scenarios for them. We test them. And effectively, you know, I had a client the other day who's like, oh, I can't make this decision. I'm like, if you cannot make it in this room when you're not about to miss out on it, then you can't be having this conversation during an auction. So, or when we're actually negotiating, because when you've got that agent coming back to you saying, oh, I've just been given another $10,000 or something, you know, you need to know in advance whether you're going to go up or not.
Correct.
So that's something that's really important for us. So then when we go and talk to those agents and they come and try to bluff us with other offers, you've got a totally different way of looking at that off at that bluff or that, you know, and I've got rabbit ears here.
Buyer. They've got another buyer in there. Yeah, we've got another buyer on this property. Sure.
Yeah. And sometimes we call their bluff and it's a bit of fun, but, you know, it's a bit white-knuckled at the same time.
Yeah.
But I just do think that that helps understand how you're going to handle that. But the other thing too, an agent will have a different tone to their voice when they really are going to sell it to someone else versus when they're bluffing you.
That is a great tip.
That's a great one.
Yeah, that is an awesome tip. But, I mean, you know, the novice buyer, they don't know that.
They've got fear clanging in their ears.
Well, that's a bit like when I had children. Someone said to me, there's an emotional cry and there's a tired cry. And I'm like, there's a difference?
Yeah.
And now I've had young kids, I actually do know the difference. But it's a bit the same. Otherwise, it just all seems the same. So you can't train that.
No substitute for experience in that sense.
Well, mate, I think for someone who's been in the thick of the Sydney market, there's some terrific insights.
Unbelievable insights. Stay strong on Sydney.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the message. What next? Well, steady as she goes.
Well, I think it's important that you make sure the fundamentals of asset selection, Ben, is it doesn't matter what market you're
play
in.
Play the long game. Don't speculate.
Yes. Yep. Critical, because not everything goes up.
Yes.
Exactly. Now, life hack, Ben. This is normally
where
I step in and deliver a life hack, but Ronnie said she's...
That's right. I don't need my notes for this one. I know this is really short and sharp.
All right.
And this is a consequence. I've learnt this because of the age that I am, which has got a 4 in it still just, right?
No.
So here's the thing.
Do you know the most Googled thing on whenever you put your name? It's Veronica Morgan age, Bryce Holdaway age. They just want to know our age.
It's not Veronica Morgan married to Bryce Holdaway, question
mark. That's second.
No, we are not. Poor old Andrea. She doesn't listen, though, does she?
That she doesn't listen.
So my life hack is that you get injured when you go to the gym. All the time, you know, and it's like, oh, you think you've sorted one thing out, another thing, your shoulder, your hip, your knee, whatever it is.
Soft tissues.
Ankle, yeah. You got to, you go to physio, you get your exercises. Your exercises, because that's really, you know, how you're going to get better. But who does their exercises?
Not me.
No, no, most blokes never do them.
No, never, I go in for the, you know, grease and oil change, the tune-up, that's it. But you know, on your exercise, no, I'm here for that.
Yeah.
You're about to do them for
Why
me.
Why do you do them? Well, here's the thing. You build it into your workout.
Ah.
Yeah. I don't know why it took me a long time to work this one out, but I've built it. I've built my exercises into my workout.
Good word.
A, it gets them done. Yes. B, it gets me to the gym because I am recovering.
Yes.
So that is my life hack.
Tim Ferriss will be proud. Minimum effective dose.
There right it is, there. Right there. Do it all in one batch. Batching.
Batching.
That's batching right there. Yeah, I'm learning.
Effectiveness.
I like it. There you go, folks. Life hack, build it into your routine.
Yes.
Save some time. Now, Ben, normally we throw this point to you for Did You Know? But we are going to throw it to Veronica. Before we do,
what's that?
I'm going to say to you, did you know, Ben,
what
did that
know?
over 4 seasons, Veronica and I did 40 episodes. And the premise of the show is that she does her search, I do my search, we swap over each other's search, we're in there for a property, we go back and we wrap up the show.
Right.
So for 39 of the 40 episodes we did that, Ben.
No.
She knows where this is going. For 39 out of 40 episodes we did that, Ivis.
So, Bryce, why not 40
out of
40? 40?
That's a good question.
Drum roll.
Did you know that we are on the Sunshine Coast? We're having lunch.
Right.
Veronica's coming to my side of the story for the property after lunch. It's getting a little bit late. The producers are saying, where's Veronica? I said, I don't know. I haven't spoken to her today. And so what do? I pick up the phone. I give her a quick call. So, Ronnie, we're about to go and shoot. How far away are you? And she goes, what do you mean? I said, how far away are you? Where are you? She goes, I'm at Bondi Junction Shopping Centre. I'm on the Sunshine Coast. So, what are you doing at the Bondi Junction Shopping Centre? You should be driving to the shoot. She goes, oh, I've misread my call sheet. She missed the plane. She misread the call sheet.
The day.
She totally. Oh. So, if that's explained. So, the mystery of why she's not,
that's why
40
I'm not in that
episodes.
In, although, can I tell you? It's because I was renovating, I was looking for lights.
But on that note,
there's
did you know?
Link.
Did I know? Okay, so here's my did my know. Now, Ben, I know you're going to add to this. This is all good.
Oh, no.
I just, you know, in there looking at some calculators, playing around, I thought, how much interest do you pay over the life of a loan?
Mm.
Now, so just a couple of little sums.
Okay, are you throwing it out as a guess?
No. I'm going to give you one, but this isn't even a real scenario. So I can read down there. It's all good. If you borrowed $840,000. So if you were, if you had your own home and you're borrowing to buy an $800,000 investment plus costs, so it's roughly 105%. So you're borrowing $840,000. Now let's assume for a minute you're going to borrow it over 30 years and assume the impossible, which is it's going to be 4% per annum interest. It's never going to be that for the whole 30 years. And assume that you're only paying interest, you're not paying principal, which once again you can't do, but you will pay $1,008,000 in interest over the life of that loan under that scenario. If you had a 30-year loan at 6% and you paid principal and interest, so it's a little bit more realistic, the total interest bill is going to be 116% of what you originally borrowed.
Which,
quickly calculate,
no,
116% of 840,000.
Well, it just goes to highlight the fact that if you get the asset selection wrong, you're paying all this interest for nothing.
Yeah.
After that, you're not making any cash.
If you're not getting capital growth.
Yeah. So what you were saying before around interest only, it's still, what we're basically saying is you're paying the minimum repayment.
Yes.
So to make that $1,008,000 in interest, you're making the minimum repayment, which does include a little bit of principal, over that term of $840,000.
Yep.
They'll write in and tell me,
the minimum.
If you're only paying interest only,
you're not adding to it.
So you pay that off, but you basically got to pay $1,008,000.
Slightly different. So what that means, this is assuming, which you can't do, that you would pay only interest over the life of the loan. And at the end of it, you've got to pay $840,000 back on top of that.
Okay, right.
But,
so
but the other one, the other scenario, is principal and interest.
Yep.
That's 116% over the life of the loan, and over and above the principal.
Which raises a really, really good point around why the asset needs to appreciate over a long period of time.
Absolutely.
Because if we're all sitting here and saying that that $1 million property in, you know, maybe an apartment in, say, Zetlands is not worth $2 million in 20 years' time or 10 years' time from now or 20 years' time from now, all of a sudden, why did we invest in it?
And if, it's not investing at all, it's vanity. And also, you know, like if you're getting, even if you're getting 8% return, which is, you know, seen as being good return, you still end up out of pocket.
Yes. So it's really, because, and so when we see the Labor Party talking about, you know, making changes that might detract the value growth, there may come a tipping point where it's actually, you know, if property prices were to stall, which would be horrible, but let's say they did, then no one would invest. Everyone would rent. I mean, so your yields would go through the roof, but you just won't get that capital growth. Crazy stuff.
Sounds like we need to get Veronica on picker, mate, just to
raise
the... I joined.
You did?
Good. I joined.
Thank you.
Been getting... Well, hopefully all my clients will be joining,
and we're
but
getting
I'm
good
encouraging
deeds
everyone
to join.
To...
Good Deeds can join as well as an associate member.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Love that support.
Well, she thought she was going, yeah, I'm on board. And then said, well, you haven't done the full lot.
As an individual investor, I'm on board.
Terrific. Well, it was good. It was good to hang out. The three of us went out for lunch. It was terrific. We had you on a Facebook Live this week, Ben. We had Veronica on Facebook Live. If you haven't heard the previous episode, it's episode number 76.
76.
So if you enjoyed this one, go and have a listen. There's a whole lot more.
We've got
Veronica's
more gold on episode 76
on that one.
And the Facebook Live earlier this week.
We did a Facebook Live earlier this week. We
on
had
the Samsung, Bryce. Samsung.
I just gave you a little note.
Come on,
just a little note over.
I had conveniently forgotten. So.
So you had a little bit of trouble with the Apple.
Well, here's what I would say to that. From memory, it was me, you and Veronica sitting on the stools. I had nothing to do with the operation, so maybe it was a Samsung.
Oh,
didn't
you
know
think
how
it might have been the operator.
Operator.
Operator error.
And hang on. Okay, and here we go. Ready?
He's
Ivers.
Not taking his medicine, isn't he?
Ivers.
Blaming.
Ivers.
Blamer.
Here's your right of reply.
Oh!
We can't explain.
No. Just say it was a finger gesture.
Can't cut that out. She can't cut that out. So yeah, no. So the point of the matter is, we had.
I think it was okay. That's what she was symbolising.
Okay, three fingers,
finger gesture. Okay,
you're absolutely right.
She's wrapping us up. She's got the swinging in
Facebook Live. So if you haven't watched that, Ben, we asked Veronica to help us with a few questions that had written in. Feel free to keep writing them in. 15 minutes on the couch every week, Ben. So if you're not on our Facebook page, go and like us.
Yes.
If you're not on our mailing list, go and join it, because we will let you know when we're going to be on. So,
beautiful.
Hey, it's been terrific. Haven't seen you for a little while, so it was terrific to hang out,
it's lovely.
Catch up, all that sort of good stuff. And next week, Ben?
We're doing a data dive with Jeremy. He's going to be on for a while. We're going to look at, because obviously in February, there's not a lot of data to look at that you could accurately rely on, because it's using January information. So we did the mindset strategy for February because we wanted to get everyone with the right mindset. Now we'll have February data, so we're going to be able to do a deep dive into that and have a look at it and get some trends for 2018.
Love it. So stick around for that next week, folks. We might even, what do we reckon, Ivis? We might get Jeremy to have a little sneaky Facebook Live with us. We'll see if we can find a research call. There you go. There's the call out, a research question. Send it in. We'll get that on Jeremy. But safe travels back. Good to have you on as always. We have all Veronica's contact details in the show notes if you want to reach out to her and say good day. I'd certainly encourage you to do that, Ben. But until next week.
Knowledge is empowering, Bryce, but only if you act on it.
Very true. See you next week.